I want to remind you that God's people are a light in the darkness. And when the world seems to be falling apart around us, so to speak, we don't need to. And concerning our economy, if you would like to sit down and get share information and get sort of debriefed on this thing, Kurt Kanodik from our church, who is a financial advisor, is willing to meet with a group of people. If you would like to do that, just take one of the cards, fill it out, put your name on it, hand to me after church, and we'll get a time when people can come to help just try to say to people, here's what Christians ought to do in a time like this. Last night, Petrolia was evacuated. I don't know if you knew that or not. There was a cloud of sulfuric acid, and just talked to Doug Rogers. They're allowed to go back this morning. And also, Barb Carson had a car accident yesterday and fractured her left thumb, and she'll get a cast on it on Monday, and chipped a bone in her right wrist, so she has a splint on that hand. And of course, she lives alone, and we'll get something organized through her congregational care and fellowship to help take care of Barb this week. Bill Snyder had a slight stroke. He's now going to be at Sunnyview Home, and I'm not sure if that's a permanent change or not. I had an error in the prayer list, took it over to redo it. Of course, my printer quit working, and so during Sunday school I'll fix that, and you can get more prayer lists after or during Sunday school today. In addition to those things, I simply would to say, Jeff and I and Aaron and Kathy and Bob Ogden were away last weekend. Doug Emmett did a fantastic job. I listened to his message online. Came home to a vital and active church. Lots of people here Wednesday night. Couldn't chase people out of here yesterday, working over at Legacy, community meal and so on. And it's just a vibrant time at North Street, sort of in a dark time in the world. So I would just ask that you continue to work for God, pray to the Lord, have faith, and carry on. So if I ask you how you're doing, what would you say? I think most of us, as soon as we're asked that question, would say, well, here's what I'm struggling with. And I really think that, I would like us to be able to say, man, am I strong. Man, am I, working for the Lord. Because that's where we find what it is that God wants us to do. And He wants us to dwell there. For the next 2 weeks, I have two messages called Strong and Courageous. One's about a young boy who did something great for God that we'll talk about today. And next week will be about an old man who continued to do great things for God. And that was Caleb, and I think we'll find some interesting things about him today. The young boy who did a great thing for God, and this message will be about David. And we'll be visiting 1 Samuel 17 with David and Goliath. In many Christians' lives, there comes a point of challenge to step out and do something for God. Yes, that's right. You didn't misunderstand what I said. So often we spend our time and our energy responding to what's already happened. And we just don't have the oomph to get out there and make something happen. Life often consumes our energies and we live in the shadow of what's happening all around us. And how I like to compare living like that, it's like always playing defense. We're always trying to protect our goal line, and we never get to try to make a touchdown. We never get to try to make a home run. We never get to try to, make a 3-point shot for the Lord. And I think that we think sometimes we shouldn't think that way. Oh, who do we think we are going to do something for God? What does He need us to do? Well, if you search the Scripture, you'll see that often He called people to do things for Him. And I find it so interesting, so simplistic, but we miss it. We're always asking God to deliver, always asking God to answer this prayer. If you search the Scripture, you'll find that most often He used another person to meet another person's need. And when we don't find something miraculous falling from heaven, we seem to think God's not really out there and God's not watching out for us and God didn't supply our need. But I'm saying I think it was there all the time. So this week and next, I'd like us to examine in a narrative style the lives of those two Old Testament characters, first David and then Caleb. These two messages will be a challenge to all of us, young and old alike. In the midst of responding to life's pressures and God's call, to accept the challenge to live a life of faith that leaves behind for the next generation a story of victory and of joy. And I would just ask you, you know, when you think about your grandma or about your uncle or aunt or somebody that lived for God, that's passed on. For my family, that was my granddad. He just always did the right thing. And everybody still knows Grandpap did the right thing. And everybody in my family wants to be like Grandpap. And so he made an influence on the next generation. Now, are you going to make an influence on the next generation? What will your kids say about you? What will your grandkids be saying about you? What mark did you make? What giant did you slay? What did you stand for? And so as I preach these two messages, I hope that you'll find yourself thinking this. You know, I haven't thought that way for a long time. I guess I could do something great for God. I guess I'm not too young to make a difference. And you know, I'm not too old to make a difference. So let's not waste any more time. Open those Bibles up to 1 Samuel chapter 17. This is the story of David and Goliath. And we'll start in verse 3 here in a few moments. It comes during a time of war between the Philistines and the Israelites. There are two armies who are fortressed and threatening battle against one another near Bethlehem. So 1 Samuel 17, David and Goliath, war near Bethlehem. And we'll find this to be true. The Israelites are on one side of one mountain, and the Philistines are on one side of another mountain. So let's start reading 1 Samuel 17:3. The Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side with a valley between them. And a champion went out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. The weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. He had a bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and the shield bearer went before him. And then he stood and he cried out and said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And you, the servants of Saul, choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and shall serve us." So let's just stop there for a moment. Goliath goes on and says, "I defy you. Give me a man." And when Saul and all the army of the Israelites heard this, they went into dismay and they were afraid and went the other way. So let's examine Goliath for a few moments. It says he was 6 cubits in a span. If you look over here in the corner, in our measurement, he was about 9 feet 9 inches. And I don't know if everybody can see this tape measure, but I tucked it up there behind that speaker. Now that'd be a pretty tall fella. I thought about having a guy like Dennis Horwat come up here and put a kid up on his shoulders, but the more I looked at it, we'd have to have a kid on the shoulders and another kid on the shoulders to get up there, or one person standing on another person's shoulders. And if some of you, a couple of you, want to try that while I'm preaching, come up and do it. But could you imagine seeing a fellow who's 9 feet 9 inches coming out against David or anybody in the army of Israel? Now it said his coat of mail weighed 5,000 shekels, and that's 125 pounds of metal hanging on him to protect his body. And the beam of his spear was the size of a weaver's rod. And we really don't know, because there's lots of kinds of looms out there. But I'm assuming a man 9 foot 9 would have hands at least twice as big as mine, wouldn't you think? And so if I would throw a spear about that big around, I'm just saying for understanding purposes, maybe, you know, the beam or the rod of his spear, you know, was like cupping our hands together, somewhere that size. But interestingly, the head weighed about 15 pounds. So I'm going to pass this dumbbell around, this dumbbell, not this dumbbell, And just to get an idea, now can you imagine that out on the end of a stick? How strong you would have to be able to launch that javelin. So David has this very formidable giant that he's going to meet here in a few moments. And the challenge is, come out here and fight. Bring somebody on here. The Israelites, what did they do? They were dismayed and afraid. And I think that describes too many of our lives. We all face some giants from time to time, don't we? Something bigger than we can imagine. Something that we just can't, how would we ever do something about that? And everybody around us is doing nothing. And they're dismayed. And they're afraid. And our lives so often are typified by that kind of defeat. We live in dismay and fear. And when we live in dismay and fear, we will not accomplish one great thing for God. You understand that? So long as we're defeated, we would never have the oomph, the energy, the courage. We would feel it hypocritical to step out in a time of defeat to try to accomplish something great for God. Now here at North Street Church, soon we're going to be talking about building, and I think it's that kind of a situation to some extent, that it's the worst time I've seen ever to try something like that. And all around we might have people saying, what's that going to be about? And we might think, why even try? And as we get closer, you'll hear more about that. But perhaps that's a giant in our congregational life. And we have to trust God, just like we'll see that David did here. So the army was exposed daily, and they were beaten down by this giant. Jump ahead there to verse 16 with me in chapter 17. It says, "And the Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening." Get that? Two times a day, this beast of a man came out. And you know, years ago we did a play on Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and I was Nebuchadnezzar. And my Nebuchadnezzar voice was like this! And I was always angry. But I could imagine this beast of a man, Goliath, coming up and saying, "Come on, you chicken! You! Why don't you come down?" Twice a day, just challenging the army. And everybody looking at each other, and some ignoring him, and some saying, knock it off. Who knows how they were acting, but nobody met the challenge. So twice a day, 40 days of insult and fear. So let's go on and meet David. Let's pick up in verse 12. "Now David was the son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, who had eight sons. And the man was old and advanced in years in the days of Saul, the king. The three oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul into battle. The names of his three sons who went to battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next to him Abinadab, and the third Shammah. David was the youngest, and the three oldest followed Saul. And David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem." We'll find that David was an armor bearer in Saul's army, but he was on leave here. "And the Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. Then Jesse said to his son David, 'Take now for your brothers an ephah of dried grain and these 10 loaves, and run to your brothers at the camp. And carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their 1,000, and see how your brothers fare, and bring back news of them. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting the Philistines.' So David rose early in the morning, left the sheep with a keeper, and took the things, and went as Jesse commanded him. And he came to the camp as the army was going out to fight and shouting for battle." So we see here that David is the youngest son of Jesse, and David is primarily a sheep herder. And his dad says to him, "I want you to take some supplies to the front line to your older brothers." They were the soldiers, and Jesse was honoring his sons through David as he carried those things to him. Then we go on, and it says there in verse 21, For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army, sort of like two roosters strutting around to see who was going to attack first. And the armies were showing off their stuff. And David, the sheep herder, who sometimes was an armor bearer, was taking this all in. And David left his supplies in the hands of a supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers. And as he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines. And he spoke according to the same words. Come on out here, you chickens! Who's going to take me on? I come every morning, I come every night. Come on, bring it on! And challenged him, saying, if I win, you serve. And if you win, we serve. And so David heard Goliath's challenge. So let's go on there. And it says, all the men of Israel, verse 24, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. And so the men of Israel, have you seen this man who's come up? Surely he has come to defy Israel. And shall it be that man who kills him, the king, will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter and give his father's house exemption from all taxes in Israel? And then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him and said in this manner, so shall it be. And so David learned that there was a bounty for Goliath. And the bounty was that you would be presented riches and a princess, and your family would be exempt from taxes. So he had an underlying reason that anybody might think about that challenge, but we'll see that's not what drove him. Verse 28. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. And Eliab's anger was aroused against David and said, why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those sheep in the wilderness? Here's what Eliab said to David. I know your pride and your insolence of your heart, for you've come down to see the battle. And David said, as two brothers would talk, what have I done now? Is there not a cause? Now remember, and we'll look at this before we close today, David was chosen by God above all the other brothers to be anointed king. And Eliab was probably still a little sore about that, saying, hey, king boy, daddy's favorite, you know, who do you think you are? Go home and take care of the sheep, would you? You're out of place here. And says, verse 30, he turned from him toward another and said the same thing, and these people answered him as the first ones did. As he interviewed his brothers, they just said, go home, David. You've got bad motives. Now, when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. Ah, so there's somebody who might take on the champion. Then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for you're a youth, and he's a man of war since his youth. So David's brothers chastised him. David then volunteers. And we see some very important things there in verses 32 and 33. David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail. How many men's hearts had already failed? A whole army full. Already said it can't be done. There's no sense. He says, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go. And Saul said to David, what? You're not able. You're just a kid. And he's a trained soldier. Now I just want you to hear those words that we had in bold. David says, let nobody be afraid, let no man's heart fail. And Saul says, you can't do it. And I think we need to understand that when God calls us to do something great for Him, you know, maybe it's taking kids into your home, maybe it's starting a small group Bible study in your neighborhood, maybe it's a mission support. Maybe it's a letter writing, you know, thing for support missionaries to encourage them. I don't know what God might call you to do, but you're always going to say, wouldn't that be great? And somebody else is going to say, it can't be done. Just how it is. And it depends on what you're focusing on. See, David had his eyes on God and the name of God and the glory of God. And Saul says, you know, he had his eyes on the giant and on David. So notice his confidence here. Let's jump over to verse 37. David says, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear," because he was a shepherd boy who had to protect sheep and sometimes chase off and sometimes kill lions and bears. He said, "He'll deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." So we see that David's confidence was in the Lord. And he got Saul to take a second look, and Saul said, "Okay, then the Lord be with you." Let's look at verses 38 and 39. Now, this is somewhat of a comical scene, and I'd thought about bringing my bib overalls and a work shirt and my boots and, you know, get Walker Hartman up here to put them all on. You can imagine what he'd look like in my clothes. That kind of a thing happens here in this text. So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put on a bronze helmet on his head, and he clothed him with a coat of mail, just like Goliath. I mean, you fight fire with fire, is the common thinking. And David fastened his sword to his armor. He tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, "I can't walk with these, for I've not tested them." So David took them off. Significant there. He puts on Saul's armor, and it's clumsy. It's probably big. It's not made to fit his body. I think we would see David as a teenage boy here, not a little 10 or 11 year old. In fact, Chris Groom, stand up. I was thinking of you, that, you know, maybe a guy this size went out there who, you know, spent his time out on the hillsides and ate right. And Chris is into running these days and, you know, was in shape, so you can sit down. But maybe a guy about Chris's size against a guy about two Dennis Horwats back there. See? And so you can imagine, okay, what are we going to do? Well, let's dress him up so he can get out there and fight. And David says, this just isn't going to work. Verse 40. Then he took his staff in his hand. That's his shepherd's staff. Okay? And he chose for himself five smooth stones from a brook. And I think they'd be this size stone. Not baseball size, not quite golf ball size, but not pea size. But, you know, something that you know where it's going to land here in a few moments. And he and his sling within his hand, and he drew near the Philistine. Now, verses 41 to 44. So the Philistine came. Oh, so somebody's going to take me on. I'll meet him, you know, at whatever time. He began drawing near to David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good looking. So the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog?" or something like that, "that you come with me with sticks?" He had that staff as if he was going to chase away, you know, some dog that was bothering the sheep. And Goliath, you know, he was really insulted. "You call that a warrior? You brought me out here for this?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And I don't know what he said. But we could maybe make up some false god curse words here, you know, to imagine what he might have said. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." So there was this great disdain by Goliath toward David. And David, the scripture says, was young and ruddy and good looking. Ruddy means reddish. Okay, so he was probably fair skinned, probably a teenager, and attractive to look at. No marked up face yet. Maybe he didn't have a heavy beard, yet I don't know. And some of the language, the Hebrew language, may even indicate maybe he was a little effeminate, at least compared to what Goliath had been waiting for. And his statement, "Am I a dog?" is one that rings. Let's look at verses 45 to 47. Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword and with a spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts and the God of the armies of Israel, whom you've defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. This day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air, the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." David said, this is a bigger fight than you'll ever know. Goliath said, "I'm just going to deliver you, your carcass, to the birds." David said, "I'm going to deliver all the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds today." But I want you to see something there. It's rather natural in David's language. He was able to discern God's will and his responsibility. He didn't say, "God will cut your head off." He didn't say, "God's going to slay you today." He said, "I'm going to kill you in the name of God. And the Lord will prevail." And I think we need to put that into our ministries when we're facing our giants, or our problems when we're facing our giants, that yes, God is God and God is true and God will be there, but God doesn't expect us to sit in the pew and mourn and wonder why. He expects us to get up, to pick up those stones and get out there and do battle. So we see here, you come to me with a sword and a spear. I come to you in the name of the Lord. The Lord will deliver you in my hand. All the earth may know there's a God. And then we see then all the assembly. Okay, that verse 47. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear. Look at those words. For the battle is the Lord's, and He will give you into our hands. Remember that. The battle is the Lord's. Verse 48. And so it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistines. What was the custom? The Israelites had been running from the army of the Philistines. Here comes the ruddy, good-looking boy, and he runs toward the army of the Philistines. And David put his hand in his bag. He took out a stone and he slung it and struck the Philistine in the forehead so that the stone sank in his forehead and he fell on his face to the earth. So get that. One stone, one sling, one strike took care of the giant who for 40 days and 40 nights had come out and challenged the whole army of Israel. Now when you see that sling, kids, don't see a slingshot that was two leather straps with a pouch and he would put it over his head like we might a lasso, let go of one of those strings, and supposedly left-handers were better at this. They could hit a very small object. They could actually, they say, hit a hare at so many yards away. They were so accurate with this. And that stone, when he let go, went right where he aimed, right between Goliath's eyes and down he went. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him, but there was no sword in the hand of David. Shepherd boys carried staffs or staves and stones and slings, but not swords. And therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword and drew it out of his sheath. I imagine it was a big sword, and killed him and cut off his head with it. Knocked him down, finished him off, beheaded him. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, what did they do? They ran. They fled. They left David alone. So the Philistines ran this time, And if you go on to read there, you'll find that Israel routed Philistia, that they followed them, they chased them. Many people died that day, and that David then carried Goliath's head, a sign of victory, took it to Jerusalem, and took Goliath's armor and put it into his tent. And then would have saved it. We're going to look at a reference here before we're done today. But can you imagine what an ultimate sign of victory that would be to carry a giant's head around with you to say, look what God did through me. Much like we who go deer hunting, when you get big antlers, you cut off its head and take it to the taxidermist and hang it in your bedroom. You know, I'm into that, but I don't know why that makes sense to us. You know, like, it's, I guess, look what I did. But we'll haul that head around in the back of a truck for 3 or 4 days, showing everybody that stopped to get gas, hey, look at his head, you know. But that's what happened here with David, with Goliath's head. This act made David famous. Look over in chapter 18 and verse 7. And so the women sang as they danced and said, Saul has slain his thousands and David his ten thousands. And so David became known as, you know, a great victor for the nation of Israel, who took out a great enemy of Israel, the Philistines, by conquering their champion, Goliath. I just want to remind you, when he got famous, Saul, who was yet king, David had been anointed. Saul had not been, it was not finished reigning. David had not been installed. And Saul became very jealous. Well, I have just five simple life lessons I'd like to leave you with from this narrative message that we've delivered today. First of all, I want to remind you that God handpicked David. If you went back in chapter 16 and start in about the 10th verse, you'll see that Samuel is sent by God to the house of Jesse to find one of his sons who would be king. And every one of those boys passed by, and Samuel said, this is not the one. This is not the one. This is not the one. And then look there in 1 Samuel 16 and look at verse 11. And Samuel said to Jesse, are all the young men here? And he said, there remains yet the youngest. And there he is, keeping the sheep. And Samuel said to Jesse, send and bring him, for we will sit down till he comes here. And so he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy, with bright eyes and good looking. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him. This is the one. Then Samuel took the horn of oil, anointed him in the midst of his brothers. The Spirit of the Lord came upon David that day forward. So Samuel arose and went to Ramah. But the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and the distressing spirit from the Lord disturbed him. And so we see that God had a plan for this boy before he ever took on that giant. And what is David's nickname, or what is he known by in the Bible? A man after God's own heart. And God knew him. And you know, David went on and did other great things for the Lord, became king. And David also committed great sin, but God still used him. But I want you to see that God handpicked him. And you need to understand that when you came to the Lord, it probably wasn't as simple as, well, I decided today I'm going to follow Jesus. That God has called your name. He knows your name. And He has anointed you and filled you with His Holy Spirit if you are a forgiven sinner and you now live a Christian life. And God has a plan for you just like He had for David. Secondly, I want you to notice this. That David used what was in his hand to serve God. You see, it wasn't the weapons of the enemy. Saul got them all dressed up, but that wasn't going to work. He wasn't familiar with that. It's the weapons of his own hand, the ones he was familiar with. And I want to remind you, we do not wage war with weapons of this world. See, we don't. Our battle is not against flesh and blood. And, you know, we may not use the same reasoning as the psychologist, or, you know, as the counselor that doesn't use the Word of God. There's lots of ways this can be applied, that we need to use what's in our hands, what we are familiar with, what we know works. And so if there were five smooth stones that I would challenge you to choose, I would challenge you to always have faith and prayer and the Word and worship and fellowship in your life. That works. That's life changing. That's life sustaining. And so that will carry us just like David's sling and his stones carried him. So God handpicked David. David used what was in his hand to serve God. Then notice this. David had no doubt, no fear. David never looked back. He didn't do the sidestep. He never wondered, what if this doesn't happen? He marched forward for God. Next, David went forth for God. Okay, he never looked back, but as he went forward, it was for God, not for him. It was the Lord's name that was at stake. David was doing it, but he was doing it for God. Now, did you notice those closest to him charged him with false motives, with selfishness, with pride and insolence, for his own glory? But that's not what David's mindset was at all. And I think that happens to us. And we need to watch it when one of ours steps out to do something great for God, that we're not saying, oh, they're just in it to get attention. And then lastly, David knew that the battle was the Lord's. He stayed in his place and left God in his place, knowing that God is always able. So to understand all this, we have to, first of all, check his heart. And he had the right heart. And then check his hands to see what's in his hands. And so as we're ready to conclude, I think we need to do the same with ourselves. We must be like David, having a heart like God's and hands that are willing to serve, to risk, to take a chance. Well, I want you to go over to 1 Samuel 21 with me, and we're going to see that song that they wrote lasted. And the more it was sung, the more angry Saul got. Over there in chapter 21, in verse 11, see, it says, "The servants of Achish said to him, 'Is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing of him to one another and dances, saying, Saul slain his thousands, David his 10,000s?'" Well, here's what's going on in 1 Samuel 21. David is now on the run. This is years later. Now on the run from Saul, because Saul's out to kill him. And David still honors Saul. And David's best friend is Jonathan, Saul's son. But Saul's out to get David because he can't stand what happened. And David became famous, and Saul was still the king. And David is on his way to hide out in a Philistine city of refuge, by the way, which would be a good place to hide from an Israelite, because they're not going to be there. But David thought he could be incognito enough, he wouldn't be noticed, but he was noticed. So let's look at this chapter 21. I want to read from verse 7 down to 22:2. 1 Samuel 21:7. "Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg, an Edomite of the chief of the herdsmen who belonged to Saul." David had stopped by and visited the priest, Ahimelech, and had asked for some food, and there wasn't any, and all that there was communion bread, so to speak, the table of showbread. And David said that he was by himself because the rest of the army was on a special mission from the Lord, and that wasn't the truth. But he ate of that, but he noticed, there's one of Saul's men, and if he sees me, I'm going to be in trouble. And David said to Ahimelech, the priest, "Is there not here on hand a spear or a sword? For I brought neither my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste." I had to get on to this mission, didn't have time to stop and pick up my own sword. And the priest said, "The sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah, there it is, wrapped in the cloth behind the ephod. If you take it, if you take that, take it. For there's no other except that one here. And David said, there's none like it. Give it to me. And David arose and fled that day from Saul, from before Saul, and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And that's when these guys saw him and said, look, there's David. Now, maybe it was Goliath's sword that gave it away. Maybe it was the way he walked. Maybe he was still ruddy and good looking. Okay. And they said, that's the one they sing about. Now, verse 12. David took these words to heart and was very much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath, because they would have gotten revenge. I mean, this is the people who he defeated. Now, look at this. So he changed his behavior before them, pretended madness in their hands, scratched on the doors of the gate, let saliva fall down on his beard. Okay. And then Achish said to the servants, look, you see this man is insane. Why have you brought him to me? Have I need for madmen that you brought this fellow to play madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? So David feigns as if he's, you know, got all kinds of spastic problems and maybe he's having a seizure or you know, is maybe has cerebral palsy, that kind of a thing that we see that can't control himself so that he doesn't get killed. And then it says in verse 22, chapter 22, David therefore departed from there, escaped to the cave of Adullam. That's an important place. So when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went to him. Now look at this. This is the company of David. And everyone who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, everyone who was discontented gathered to him. So he became captain over them. And there were about 400 men with him. And I simply want you to see, once again, David draws on what he has at hand. He's not with an army. He feigns being crazy. And then, who's the company that surrounds David? People who are going bankrupt. Society's lowest. The misfits came and joined him at the cave of Adullam. And he continued to use them. So I simply would say, how about you? Have you ever thought God might be calling you to do a great thing for Him? And you might say, I just don't have what it takes. I don't have the people that surround me. Neither did David. I don't have the equipment that it takes. Neither did David. You see, he had a heart after God's and hands that would go and do the work. So I simply would ask you as we come to sing, what's bigger than you can handle right now in your life? What's the giant in your life? Is it relational? Is it financial? Is it health? Is it what the economy has done? I mean, I realize people who have been faithful in investing, you know, their worth has gone, you know, not in half, but close to half perhaps in a week's time. And that false security that has worked for so long isn't there anymore. Maybe that's the giant in your life. So I would ask you to simply consider, what's in your hand that God can use? Maybe you do have half as much as you had last week, but God can still use that. And I would ask you, would you work for God with us? Work for God with us here and now. It's not a what if thing. It's not when the giant comes by. The giant's already here. So would you just say, Lord, I'll work for you. I'll trust you, and I'll work to slay that giant. Let's stand and sing. And I'm not opening the invitation today while we sing. If you would like to speak to me afterwards, I'll stick around. You can speak to me then. Let's just sing this song together.